This conference will now be recorded.
All right, everybody. Hey, how are we doing today? My name's Claire Bartlett, and you're watching Me and My Racket. It's the podcast about tennis industry professionals sharing their passions, their purpose, and their stories, and all of us connecting over a sport we know and love. And today on the show, we have Rhiannon Potke. Rhiannon,
Hi, sorry I'm a little blurrier than you. Yours is very nice.
No, we're good. We got this. So, you all to introduce Rhiannon, wanted to give her bio. She has been a journalist for 21 years, working at multiple newspapers and websites covering nearly all sports at all levels. And that includes being a college beat reporter in the SEC, Pac-12, and Mountain West conferences. She is the founder and executive director of Goods for Greatness, which provides sport equipment for low-income kids. Rhiannon, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. This is kind of like the shoes on the other foot. I'm usually the one like
I
in
know,
here. I'm really
right?
excited to actually do the other side of it.
Yeah, that's so cool. Well, how things been going? What's been going on in your world?
I mean, different, like everyone, as a journalist, it's been with no sports. It's hard to cover sports, when you don't have any sports to cover. So,
Yeah.
and I live alone here, so that's been kind of isolating. I see my family. I talk to them every day, but they're about 4 hours away. So just a
Yeah.
lot of changes, but everyone's in the same boat, and I'm grateful for what I do have, and there's so many people that are worse off. So it's just kind of, I mean, I'm used to working from home, so that's not been a change, but everything else obviously in our world has been a change. And I'm someone that worries for everyone, so it's been kind of just the anxiety level to want to help people and not be able to because you can't go near them. That's
Yeah.
been an adjustment for me. But professionally, things have changed, not all for the good, just like everyone, slowing down. But I'm still able to write stories and still able to talk to people by phone. So as long as I can still do that, I kind of keep my sanity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, like we were talking about before the call started, just connecting with people in any way, whether it's video or phone call, and like making that effort is a big deal, especially in a time like this when like none of us have, been through this where we're all isolated and, to our homes and by order. So it's definitely a change.
Yeah, it's for everyone. I mean, like I said, I don't think there's in the select few, there's like a 0.01% that haven't been impacted in any way, and those people are just the complete outliers. But
Oh yeah. Yeah.
it's surreal, and it's a moment in history that it's kind of, as a journalist, I'm kind of fascinated by it because I know that this is going to be something that people study like years from now. But
Right.
it's scary to go through it, and just I feel bad for a lot of people because it's just such a, there's just so many families and people that are impacted in every way possible.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, it's hard, especially for like people. I'm in the same boat. Like I'm feeling for other people as well, and I feel kind of helpless in that. Like I don't know what to do or how much, I can help. Like because we have our own things, and then it's just like some things are so far removed. It's like what can I do? And just learning how to keep that stress under control and like doing what you can, is key, I think.
Yeah, you just do whatever is safe and healthy and help, and you try to help when you can, and
Right.
just do everything to keep yourself healthy too, mentally and physically, because that's a key component of this as well. And
Right.
that's something I've really tried to focus on. As I've aged, I've gotten a little bit better about being better about taking care of that.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
I'm still horrible at it. Like that's just that's coming from a place where I was really bad to like not so bad anymore. So
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, I know this time we'll get through it, as the human race does, but it's definitely a tough time. And again, just for all our viewers too, I hope everybody's doing okay and taking those precautions to stay safe and healthy. So Rhiannon, I did want to get in to talk about your story now, and I
right.
wanted to just learn a little bit about like where you started. And I know you've been involved in sports like your entire life, and now you're a journalist writing, and you've written a lot about tennis, as well as many other sports at many different levels. So tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, gosh, sports has been like basically my life. I can't even remember. I mean, I must have been playing right when I was born. Like, it's just been a part of, I can't even remember a time where I didn't have a ball, a bat, a racket, something in my hand playing. I have an older brother, so we were always playing together, as we were growing up. So I grew up in, I was born in New Hampshire, but we moved to California. So I was actually very fortunate as a female athlete to live in Southern California because it's super progressive, super competitive in all the sports. And I was a four sport athlete. I played basketball, soccer, softball, and then tennis. And in full honesty, tennis was the one I quit. I quit at about 14. I'm a team sport person. I just don't like myself very much sometimes, and that's not good for tennis. I was a great doubles player. I was good at tennis, but it just wasn't mentally healthy. I just came back.
That's a very wise decision.
Yeah, it was. And like I said, a four sport athlete in that time when specialization wasn't quite as rampant, thank gosh, because I am so anti-specialization. I mean, I could carry, like, I could start the train to, like, I get so infuriated when I have people that are forcing specialization. So I was blessed to be able to do all four. And then, I thought I wanted to be a doctor. I thought I wanted to be like a fishing game warden. I had all these ideas that had come out of high school. But I wrote for my high school newspaper, and that kind of, that lit that passion a little bit. And once my I had my playing, I was supposed to play basketball in college. I was recruited for soccer, softball, and basketball, and decided on basketball. I came down with something called fibromyalgia, which is, kind of threw a wrench in there. So I volunteered the newspaper to take scores while I was kind of figuring out, like what I was going to do now without sports because I couldn't live without sports. And I decided I'm not. I got to still stay in sports.
Yeah, that's
So,
it. Yeah.
yeah. So that got me on the train to just stay in sports journalism.
Yeah.
Went to Santa Barbara, worked full time at a newspaper. And then, I've just kind of hopped around. I mean, I've covered a lot of like UCLA, USC. I've covered high school. I've covered junior college. I covered BYU for the Salt Lake Tribune. I've just, and then I moved about 3 years ago, moved to Tennessee, Knoxville, to cover University of Tennessee football for the Knoxville New Sentinel here. So it's been like 21 years of just covering for newspapers, various websites. Right now, I work for about four or five different websites that I write for. Cover softball, college football, tennis, obviously. And left newspapers about 2 years ago to start the nonprofit that you mentioned. So, but never don't haven't left journalism. And as much as it's trying to be killed by everyone and die a slow death, I am adamant to keep writing as long as I can pay my electricity bills and
That's
food.
right. This is keeping
So,
it alive. It's very important.
yes. So it's my passion. I mean, I'm very curious. I love sports. I like to write. So, like, you combine those three, and that's what my job is. And I do love it. So that's the short version. I mean, I could go into great detail of like my, but it would bore people to death
Oh
probably.
no,
But
it
that's
wouldn't.
how I got into the journalism, on the journalism track, in
Right.
terms of the profession. And like I
Yeah.
said, I've covered so many cool events, US Open, college football playoff,
Yeah.
Rose Bowls. Just so many cool experiences, Little League, even Little League World Series,
Yeah.
that I'm super grateful for that. I mean, it's not, I mean, people think it's a little bit more glamorous than it is. Believe me, you're staying at budget motels and working like 20-hour days. It's not super glamorous. But I mean, I'm covering sports, so let's be real. It's not like it's like digging ditches or anything. So, and my grandfather worked in a coal mine. So I always have that perspective of like, I'm pretty blessed to be doing what I do. Regardless
Covering
of,
what you love,
I mean, it doesn't, it's not tons of money or anything. It's not, but you get to be around great athletes. And I'm especially passionate about college sports. And some of those athletes are just so, they're just so inspiring, some of them. Some of them have just so much, like, the way they handle things, how much they have on their plate, like, the stuff that they want to become, the people that it gives me faith sometimes in like mankind, when we have all these generations. So I really enjoy that aspect of it. I really like talking to athletes and kind of sharing their stories because some of them are really more multidimensional than a lot of people give them credit for.
Well, yeah, like a lot of people, like you're saying, they see just like the sports person, right? They don't see the like maybe academic or the artist or all that behind them, so.
Yeah, and that's what I love to share. I mean, I love to kind of, I'm a big feature writing person. I love to kind of tell someone's story within the story. So like still write about them as a great player, but then weave in aspects of stuff that maybe people didn't know about them or their family or their background or what their interests are. Granted, like there's not much time when you're a college athlete other than sports and and homework, but they are more like developed people, and they do have interests that are, and they have backgrounds, and so it's fun. I like to, like I said, I'm very curious, so that's been the fun part.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's awesome. Well, so kind of walk us through, I know, like, a typical day in the week is just, well, what does that look like right now? But like when, before all this, what did that look like? And I know you travel a lot, but, say a day or a week or a month, what does that look like for you with all of your roles?
Yeah, well, lately, before I was traveling a lot more when I was actually working in a newspaper covering a beat, because you traveled all the games. Since I stepped away from that, and I've been like, I also obviously work, for the tennis audience, tennisrecruiting.net is, I'm a writer there. So I incorporated more tennis stories into my portfolio. I'd always kind of covered it, but now more. So typical week for me, now that I'm not on a beat, it's not quite as much traveling as before. But, I work and this has always been made anywhere from 60 to 80 hours a week. I mean, I'm not, there's never been such a thing as a 40-hour work week for a journalist. If there is, they're lying, or they're not doing exactly what they're doing. You don't get paid for, you get paid for 40, but you do the 60 to 80 if you want to be good at your job.
Yeah.
So basically, every day I'm writing, I write, at least a story a day, doing interviews by phone or in person. I try to write, I probably average about, 8 or 9 stories a week for between all my 4 or 5 websites I write for. So I'll get up, usually I go for a long bike ride in the morning when the weather's suitable, which it hasn't been lately, which is not pleasing. If it's I have a threshold. If it's 50 or above, I'll go out. If it's not, I'll wait, until the
sun. Yeah, going on the bike with the wind resistance, I would think that would be cold.
I know, people are like, I can walk in less than 50, but when you're riding and you're going, the wind chill gets pretty gnarly. And it's not fun anymore. I'm like, why am I doing this? It's not fun. So then I'll come back. I'll read. I'm an insatiable reader. I read all sports. I read like 5 or 6 newspapers a day. I'll block out from like, I get up at like 4:30, 5 in the morning, and then I'll read for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Then I'll dive into my own stuff. I'll be writing stories. I'll have interviews scheduled by phone. Sometimes I'll go cover a college football game, college basketball game here at University of Tennessee, college softball, baseball. That's every, that's a lot of my weekends is spent doing that. During the week, it's a lot of just interviews, writing stories, editing stories, because I edit, conference calls, doing like some data entry that's very boring, but is necessary,
Necessary, yeah.
And then splicing in whenever I can with a nonprofit, doing some of that. Like whenever I'm, I work from home and I kind of, I don't have like a set, like, clock in, clock out. So I'm pretty much like, my job is my life in a way. Like I work it in, I kind of just, so I try to work in like some stuff with the nonprofit during hours I need to. But that's generally like week to week. I mean, days vary in terms of when interviews are and what stories I'm working on and what, events are going on. But since I've kind of left newspapers, that's been, and even when I was in newspapers, it was generally, mornings spent writing, afternoons or nights spent covering a game, weekends are all games, and then, try to sleep a little bit and stuff like that.
Find some time for sleep.
But yeah, and I've been really a lot better about that since I got out of newspapers. It's actually a little healthier because you don't have to be at a game till midnight or 1 or 2 in the morning, which is what you're doing a lot when you're covering a team.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
So that's my general week.
That's quite a week. Well, so you mentioned you like to read a lot, and especially like the sports section. So I imagine you're reading what, like local and national papers, or what all are you reading there?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I do. I read the AP Wire. I read, and I'm not just sports. I read, business style. I'm just curious. Like, I love learning about stuff. It's funny because like I know all about these reality things, these shows that are on TV. I never watch them half the time. I
just read about them.
So I know they're popular, and I'm like, okay, I've never seen Game of Thrones, but I know everything about it just because I'm fascinated with why people are fascinated about it half the time. So I read like the AP Wire. I do. I have a subscription to the New York Times. I read the Washington Post when I, MSN.com is a great source. And it has some of those articles you can get for free without having to. I'm a huge, I subscribe to like 5 different things, but given my budget, I love to help every local paper in the world.
Right.
I think it's such an essential thing.
Yeah.
I read, like, I start with sports, obviously, to make sure that I'm up on all the stuff that I'm going to be you know, and if something is something that like I'm talking to someone I know about it, because from a national perspective, SEC perspective, Pac-12, a lot of college stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, I mean, I read, like I said, a lot of just Associated Press, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times when I need to, my local papers that I was at before.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything. I fulfill every one of those 10 free article requirements on almost every single newspaper site in the country.
Yeah.
And then I wait patiently till the next month comes up so I can redo it again.
Yeah.
I open like various web browsers and use my phone, so maybe I can get stretched out to 30 or 40 views.
Oh, that's smart. I hadn't thought about that, but that's
smart. A life trick. That's a, you know, it's a life trick right there.
Yes.
So, yeah. So anyway, and I have a tablet, so I try to do it all where I can get it because I love, and I learn. I mean,
right.
You never stop growing. I always read to see how people approach stories and what they include and how the, does this sound, because you never want to be biased. You try to read to make sure that it was very even-handed.
Right.
So it's, for me, it's kind of like, it's fun, I learn, and it's part of my job, I consider it. So
yeah, oh no.
Yeah, so yeah, and I read a lot, yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Most of my meals, since I'm alone and single, are spent like, I read while I eat my meals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's fine. That could be why I'm still single at near 40, but that's just
wow.
There's a lot of reason for that. So.
Well, that's a very admirable quality, I would say. And just like you're saying, it contributes to your profession and just as a writer, like it, you know, you're always learning and always, you know,
exactly.
How other people are writing and yeah, we could go on and
yeah.
On.
And I have so many friends in the industry that I love reading their stuff. Like, it's fun for me to read, like, and be like, man, that, you know, that was a great article. I text them or I send them a message.
Yeah.
Like, that was a great article. So,
yeah.
It's, for me, it's like, I just love to see people, you know, how they approach things. And, like, I just love kind of being their cheerleader, too, when I can be.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, so, like, in that vein, how, like, what are some of the influential articles or books, you know, that you've read throughout your time? I'm sure there's so many, but
yeah.
A few that you can think of off the top of your head.
I mean there's so many articles, you
yeah.
know, like a lot of, I mean, there's just so many good writers. That's the thing right now, is like so many are laid, people, our industry is getting decimated, people are getting laid off. There's more talent than ever out there. It's so ironic because it's like, and there's no place for some of them to write. Like, there's Pulitzer Prize winners that have been laid off. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, like.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, I've always kind of obviously, I really don't have an article per se, because honestly, I have millions at this point that I've read.
Yeah.
But, like, there's like, you know, when I was younger, Jackie McMullen, she was at the Boston Globe, and then at SI, now she's with ESPN. She was influential. Robin Norwood, Sally Jenkins is a lot of the female reporters I looked to first, but. There are so many good male reporters too that I followed. A lot of the SI guys. Now it's sadly SI has gone into the tank now that it's been bought by someone else. But
yeah.
It was kind of the standard for me, you know, like writing. The Athletic produces great stuff every day. It's a pay for site for sports.
Yeah.
I'm leaving out like, I mean, I just, there's so many that I really, and I, like I said, I can't really name one article. I can name probably some that I've read this last 3 months, but that would leave out the last 20 years of stuff that I thought
yeah.
was great.
Yeah.
So, there's a whole host. And if anyone ever wants, they can find me on Twitter, find me on Facebook, and I'll
yeah.
send them like writers if they want to know. But
yeah,
there's a lot. And a lot of them are just, like I said, really reputable ones. Some that you may not have heard, some you may have, but
yeah.
There's just tons. I mean, even John
yeah.
Wirthon, the tennis people would know. He's not
right.
just tennis. He writes great stuff for other things for SI. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yeah. Well, that's really inspiring to know. Like, cause and I have my own people I follow, but then I find someone else, and like you're saying, it's just hard to name like a few. And that's just really cool to know that there are even more, even more. Help.
There are. And like I said, if anyone has like a particular genre they like or like a sport they follow.
Yeah.
You can reach out to me. I'll tell you, like, I'll give
yeah.
you a list of like 15 writers to follow on and write and read their stuff because there's so many. And like I said,
yeah.
it's really exciting for someone like me, but then at the same time, it's kind of depressing because there's not as many jobs available, you know, for them. So
right.
it's kind of a catch 22 right there. So
yeah. Well, yeah, and we can put your information like in the description so if people want to find you, reach
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I'm an open book. I'm available. And when you're a journalist, there's no anonymity. So.
Right.
Anywhere. My when I was covering SEC football, I there was a lot more feedback and not always great when you're on Twitter from
right.
some people that don't believe that, you know, maybe women should be covering football, which is another yeah. topic. Oh, really.
That's a whole other issue.
It's lovely.
Oh, man. Well, switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about your nonprofit. Tell us a little bit more about that, Goods for Greatness, and how, you know, you came up with the idea and how that started and what that is looking like right now.
Yeah. Well, the idea started actually when I was way back in high school, mm-hmm. even before high school. I remember my dad used to drive us to practices. He was the dad that was – he wasn't a total sports dad, but he was very volunteer and always wanted to help people. So we would drive every teammate home. That was our job. We had teammates that lived in really poor areas. And my dad would get us in the minivan. He'd drive into these areas. And sometimes I was scared. So I was like, I don't know if we should be in this area, but you know. So I saw a lot of those teammates that didn't have a lot of equipment, you know. And then I saw some of my teammates that had they had the new racket every month. They had new shoes every week.
Wow.
And then this other teammate would not have new cleats for 3 years. They had holes in their cleats. I thought, well, why can't I just give the ones that you just wore for a month mm-hmm. and give them to this teammate? So that kind of started the, you know, like a planted a bug in my head. Mm-hmm. And it became more and more apparent in high school that there was income disparity and there was a lot of equipment that just wasn't getting used that really was just sitting in garages and could get that someone else would find to be the best piece of equipment they ever had.
Yeah.
But it took me a long time to get to a place in my life where I could start the nonprofit, apply for the 501c3.
Yeah.
Be where I felt I could have a career, hours. Cause when you're covering a beat, you have no time. So it was going to require me to get to a place where I could get out of newspapers. I determined that at some point.
Right.
So now that I, it was about 2 years ago, I said, I'm going to do it. I'm sick of putting it off. There's so many people that need help.
Yeah.
So I did the 501c3, mm-hmm. got it started. So it was a high school thing that came to fruition because I just, and even as a reporter, I would see it. I'd cover schools that were really poor and schools that were really rich.
Yeah.
And schools that were really rich. I was like, can I bring all your leftover stuff to the school that's really poor? But that's not my place because I'm a journalist. You can't do that.
Yeah.
It's for grade number 4, grade. And it's been awesome. I mean, right now I'm kind of obviously the circumstances. I kind of put it on a lull because I really believe people should be giving to food pantries right now and giving to, you know, a lot of other more necessity. But I caveat that with I'll be there on the back end to give these kids equipment once they need that sports to come back and to really enrich their lives.
Yeah.
And they're getting money to pay for that stuff. That's when I'm going to jump in. Right now I'm giving them just a wait period. And then we'll be back and helping kids as soon as this is over because they're going to want to play more than ever. And they're going to need stuff because their families can't afford it.
Right.
So essentially what Goods for Greatness does is we provide, sports equipment for low income or kids or programs. We get financial donations from people so we can purchase equipment or we have people donate their used equipment. So if you have some leftover tennis rackets, we've done it at tennis events where people will bring leftover bags and rackets and donate it to some Title I high schools that really, those schools get left out, really no one pays attention to them, sadly.
Yeah.
A lot of their kids are the ones that they have these cheap rackets that break so we get and the rackets we're giving them, they're rackets they would never ever own. And even if they're used, they're awesome. Mm-hmm. A lot of baseball, softball equipment. So I have people that donate me their used equipment and I try to regionalize it. So if you're donating it to me in Missouri, I'll find a team in Missouri and match you guys up so you can give your equipment, so you can help your own community.
Yeah.
If you care and you want it to go national, I'll tell you who to send it to. If you want to send equipment, if you want to donate money, the same applies. You can tell me, hey, I want to target it for this city. I'll find a kid or a program in need. I've done that, thousands of dollars have done that already where people have said, hey, my hometown, I want to donate some money, find a kid. We find one of the poorest kids in the place and he gets brand new shoes, brand new bat, something. And a really big thing for me that I saw a loophole that needed to be filled that's been really crucial to Goods for Greatness mm-hmm. is the fact that a lot of a lot of the major colleges have so much leftover equipment, and then
Yeah.
they get new equipment the next season. And all
Right.
that equipment just sits there, and they can't donate it to kids that are recruitable age, right? They can't. So it's
Right.
an NCAA violation. So
Right.
no 5-year-old is going to fit into equipment for a college kid, let's be real. So
Yeah.
they can't give it to the people that probably are the only ones that could use it. But if they
Right.
give it to Bits for Greatness, we can donate it to kids that'll get a use out of it. So I've had, you know, probably 20 to 30 different colleges donate me some of their, whether it be tennis rackets, softball equipment, baseball, soccer, and I've spread it out into their community to kids in need. And they've helped over, you know, it's been over 500 kids now through colleges alone. And
Yeah.
they're excited because they don't need that stuff anymore. They want to get rid of it, but they're
Right.
kind of, unless they just, they can't, they're almost handcuffed. So
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, become the go-between.
Yeah.
We've helped over now, you know, 2 years. It's kind of a, I have a board, and my relatives have been really great helping, but they have lives and they're busy. So it's kind of a one-woman operation in that sense. But
Yeah.
we've been able to help over 900, you know, kids already. And, you know, like I said, we're always looking for finance. The Bryan brothers donated about, you know, $1,500 last year
Wow.
that we helped a whole bunch of kids with tennis.
Yeah.
So the financial donations are huge for us, but
Yeah.
I understand people can't always donate money. So if you can, you know, donate a used racket or bat, and we've been really successful with that. And we have a website, goodsforgreatness.org. Again, if anyone wants to take part, they can reach out to me. A lot of college players themselves want to make a difference, and they donate me their equipment. And I find kids, and they're, you know, they're when they're done with their career, they don't have any use for some of the stuff. So it's been great. I mean, honestly, if I was independently wealthy and I could do that full time and just help as many kids as possible, because I'm such a proponent of sports
Oh,
and the
yeah.
benefits, and I
Yeah.
don't think income should preclude a child from experiencing those benefits.
Right.
That I would do it like 24 hours a day. I would work 900 hours a week if I could help these people, but I need to obviously make a living and pay the bills. And so yeah, it's a passion. I mean, I truly, that is my true passion in life.
Yeah.
And I only wish I could have more time and more, and I had more funds and more resources to help more, because I would.
Yeah.
But you know, it is what it is. I do what I can, and I do as
Yeah.
much as I can with what I get. So it's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. Well, yeah, and I can just feel your passion here,
Oh
like
yeah.
talking about
I get
that.
really excited. I'm like, man, I should talk about this more. I kind of get some more, like, you know, adrenaline. I should probably do this before I write or something, so I can get more.
Well, that's a true gift for sure. Well, so what advice, like with all your experience, what advice would you give to like professionals that are coming into the tennis industry, and you know, maybe they want to be a journalist covering tennis and other sports, or maybe they want to start their own nonprofit. Well, like what advice or suggestions do you have for them?
Yeah, I mean, I always encourage, if there's, you know, kids or anyone coming in to be writers, they want to.
Yeah.
I don't discourage it. I mean, I always give them the caveat now. It's not an easy industry.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard. It's not, it's very, you know, sketchy right now in terms of job security.
Right.
If you don't make a lot, the hours are horrible and long.
Yeah.
But if you have a passion for it, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And my best advice for them is just write as much as you can, read as much as you can. Even if you're not like hired by someone, you can still write stories. You can watch a game on TV and write a story.
Mm-hmm.
Network as much as possible, get involved, get your stuff in front of people to read. You know, just really be proactive about it. But like I said, the two fundamentals, you have to know how to report and how to write. So the best to do that is just to get experience. And I don't care where that. Some people kind of like, oh, I need to start at like ESPN. Like, no, you need to start like covering a high school football game. Because if you cover a high school football game, you can cover anything in the world. I'll just tell you that. That's like the hardest thing to cover. So I just encourage people, don't, you know, you need to put in the work to get there. And if you really love it, do it. But if you're just kind of on the fence about it, you may not want to do it, because it's just not, if there's a lot of, it's, you have to be passionate about it. You have to be curious. You have to want to learn. And you've got to be multidimensional now. You can't just be like, you have to know how to write, edit, film, you know,
Right.
podcast, you know, video.
Okay.
you've got to be a multimedia journalist and be and know, you know, writing about tennis is great, mm-hmm. and there's a place for that. But like, I love all sports, so I write about 17 different sports, and I love them all. So
yeah.
you know, and that helps because you have more places to, you know, to feasibly yeah. write.
Right.
So, and you know, I just always encourage people to just, like I said, just find places to get your content, even if you're just writing for yourself.
Right.
And then ask people like me. I mean, I read kids' stuff all the time, and I give them that.
Yeah.
yeah. This industry is very giving. We are very helpful. I love that yeah. about us. If you see on Twitter during this time, everyone's at, like, you know, taking questions, answering, like, doing stuff. Because we all want the best for each other. I mean, it's competitive, but it's also very like, hey, we want to breed young journalists to come up. So that's my best advice, is just to, you know, just have your skills sharp. Never turn down opportunities. Always, if someone offers you an assignment, don't be like, oh, I don't want to do that, or that's beneath me. Nothing's beneath you. And treat my philosophy, even to this day, I treat every story like it's like the U.S. Open, the Super Bowl, the World Series, because to some person you're writing about, it could be. I mean, you could be like, if you're covering high school, that could be the one story that kid's name gets in.
Oh, yeah.
You're not always going to write great, but you want to at least be treating it like it is great. Like, it's going to be, because there's days you just don't have it. Let's be realistic.
Right. And everything.
Yeah. You want to at least, you know, realize that the person reading it, that they could be impacted by it. And you don't know who's reading that one story. You never know. So give it your best. Put your heart into it. They're not all going to be great. But if you just go in with that, you know, be where your feet are. Treat everything like it's the biggest thing ever.
Right.
You know, feasibly, hopefully you'll make your way up. You can't guarantee it. Some of it's luck. But networking and writing and just reading are my three, you know, core philosophies with that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's great. Sorry, go ahead.
No, in terms of starting a nonprofit, it's a lot of work.
Yeah,
I'll tell you that. So my best part of that is, like, I went to the college law school here, the pro bono, like they do like a free clinic.
Yeah.
And I got advice from them, because if you don't know, it's very complicated. So if you have a passion for something, pursue it. And if you're really passionate about helping someone in a certain way, but just know that it's a lot of work, a lot. And a lot of it is outside my expertise. So what my best advice is, to find people that have done it before mm-hmm. and ask about their expert, and ask if there's, you know, you don't always have to start a nonprofit to still help. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, but you can find them. You can kind of partner with people. But if you really want to start your own, just understand that it's a complicated legal process. There's a lot of money to start. There's fees and things. And so just try to find someone that's an expert in it to help you, because if you screw up the application, it could take you another 2 years to get it through again. So just make sure you're really, like, you're associated with people that are very well versed in it, is my best advice.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can learn from the professionals, right? Not meaning you can do everything, but you learn, you know, I'm sure as you said, you learned a lot through that whole process.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not afraid to. I told them, I'm like, I know nothing. Like, and that's my, like, I always encourage, like, I don't pretend to be a know-it-all. Like, I want people that, like, I think the best thing is when you tell people you don't know it all, and then you won't be, if you're too egotistical to admit, like, oh, I can do this on my own, like, it's no, you know, you're not going to be able to. Maybe you will, but not me. I knew my strength. That was my strength.
So thankfully
I had some really nice people that believed in that mission and helped me, and it worked out. But it was not because I, like, spent hours myself doing it. It was because I sought out people to kind of guide me.
Right.
And the best decision I made, because I would have never been able to do it by myself. It would have taken me like 10 years just to start that, you know, to file all the paperwork.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'd already waited 20 years to start it. So I wasn't like, I can't do like 10 more years of waiting. So.
No, especially after, like you said, the idea came about in high school. So.
So that's my best advice, is just to, you know, consult with others that have done it before, and then see if you really, and if you're still passionate about it after you know what it's going to entail, mm-hmm. go for it. Because there's always a need to help.
Yeah.
But just know all that in the back end first.
Yeah. No, exactly. Well, so through all this, you know, through your experience with the nonprofit and you know, writing as a journalist, who have been your mentors and heroes? And they can be within the, you know, profession or outside, but who have been these people in your life?
Yeah, I thought about that question and I saw it, and like there's a lot in terms of the professional side that I've just kind of like leaned on for advice that most people here probably wouldn't know. But I really just, the key person has been my dad. Like my dad has been like my hero mentor for everything in my life. Like, you know, I was a total daddy's girl. We went like on outdoor excursions together all the time. He was just one of the hardest working and most like generous men I've ever met, and he still to this day is. Like he still wants to help me every day in some way, and I'm like, you know, it's just like I try to let him because it's like he wants to help. He sets a high standard of just work ethic and just being a good person, good morals, good values, good ethics. And he's like, he always wanted to help people, like no matter what. Like it was, even if we didn't have, like, you know, there was periods, like he was just telling me the other day, there was a time where he thought he was gonna get laid off. I didn't know all this, and I was scared he was because he had a family and like stuff that like I didn't even know he went through and never really like let it on. So I continually am amazed just kind of like what he's instilled in me that I just absorbed, and I'm so grateful that I spent so much time with him to get those lessons. And I think just his work ethic and his generosity are two things that have, like, in all parts of my life have rubbed off. So he's by far the biggest. I mean, I had like sports heroes when I was a kid, but once you get older, you realize the true hero, if you're lucky, are, you know, a family member or parent. And I'm thankful that it was my father. And still to this day, I mean, he's still, like I said, he's the most generous person I've ever met, and he still tries to be. And I try to tell him like, it's okay, Dad. You know, you don't have to, but he wants to. And
Wants to.
it, yeah, and I just love it. It's been a blessing for me to have that and be able to say that. So yeah, my
Man.
dad is a number one on that list. I could go through others like professionally that have helped me, but that it wouldn't come close to touching the influence of him. So.
Wow, that's amazing. And it just, like you've described, it just sounds like all of his stuff, it just really comes from the heart. Like that's who he is at his core.
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, he's just, and it's funny. I mean, even some bad, like even his impatience is rubbing, and let's just say his, and I don't mind, I am like the cheapest person ever. And a lot of that came from him, and now he's like not anymore. And he's like, man, you have overtaken me with like the frugalness. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. It's one title I gotta read. Because he's kind of relaxed now more with age, but he taught me like, now we gotta be stringent, you gotta be on a budget, you know. And I'm just like, so it's funny, there's even some like, they're not negative qualities, but qualities that maybe aren't quite as like, he's super impatient and so am I. And but he's actually gotten less patient than me, and I've gotten better. So we've kind of, you know, yeah, for good and bad. I mean, the quality that I can find, I'm like, wow, we're so much alike like that. It's weird. So.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, that's amazing. Well, so, you know, when you're not doing all tennis and you know, covering tennis and covering other sports and doing your nonprofit, is there anything you like to do for yourself, like in your free time? Because I know before this you said you like to read, you know, when you're eating cereal, which is totally respectable.
Yes. Well, biking, like I'm an outdoors person. So biking's my number one, like outdoors and hiking. Those two are my two outdoor passions. I can't run as much anymore because of my, you know, I've had like knee surgeries and everything. And so biking became like a salvation for me. So I'll bike. I mean, if I could bike like, you know, 2 to 3 hours a day, I would. Sometimes I do. It just depends. So that's a big one for me. Hiking, I love being like the Smoky Mountains. I love to go hike in the Smokies when I can. And then, I mean, like honestly, just like watching games when, I mean, I love watching college football, college basketball. I mean, part of that's kind of work slash free time. Like sometimes it bleeds into each other. Like I don't know what's what, but yeah, most of my free time is spent outside of, like you said, reading or something, is spent outside either, you know, biking, hiking, walking, doing something. Cause I love nature and I love kind of the fresh air. That's one reason this has been hard too. I mean, thankfully we're still allowed to walk like without within 10 to 6 feet of people. And here where I live, it's a little easier than say like a big city, that, and I'm not a big city person. So, yeah, I'm like a big outdoors person too. I love just, you know, like out in like Mother Nature and being in like mountains and streams and stuff. So.
When you're in a perfect location for it up there in Knoxville. I mean, we have our nature here in Chattanooga, but Knoxville being up, like you said, next to the Smokies
One
and
reason I moved here, man. I mean, I loved it. I mean, obviously I can afford to live here a lot better than California, which is, but I wanted my, you know, my parents, we go to Colorado a lot and I love it there because the mountains. So I'm just, this, I knew if I, you know, I could never do big city ever. I mean, I know that about myself. So I needed to be more like outdoor stuff. So it is, it's beautiful here.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it is. Have you, in Colorado, have you done the, I'm now forgetting what it's called when you climb like a certain mountain at a certain altitude.
Oh yeah. Like the, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Now, I mean, I'm sure I've done, I actually have probably done a few just unintentionally, but I don't really care. Like, I don't, like, I'm not one to, like, check off lists, you know?
Right.
I just kind of go out and, like, and I'm, like, one, like, I'm kind of psychotic like this, like, even on bikes. Like, I like the highest incline. Like, just give me the steepest way I can walk. And, like, I love a ride. And so I like these big hills in Knoxville, like, with my bike. I'm, like, okay, I think if the lowest gear I can get up here, and sometimes I've had to, like, literally get off because it's been too steep. But, like, I love, it's just kind of weird, but I just like how much burn those hills create. So, and then once you get up, it's a beautiful view, right? So it's like you get the reward at the top. So I never really, like I said, charted it, but I've done a few, and I've done, like, my, you know, my dad, they've got a place that's, like, at 10,000 feet. So I've got, like, you know, up to, say, you know, 14, 15,000 on some of these peaks, and, you know, I love it. I mean, it's kind of, like I said, I'm kind of psychotic like that, weird, but I like that, you know, where you just kind of, like,
you're on the burn.
Yeah, like, let's take the highest peak, and I'll get up there, so.
Oh, yeah. No, as an athlete, I can totally understand, because I like to push myself as well, and you kind of, like, go for that, you know, you go out to do that, and then you feel, like you're saying, light at the end of this tunnel, you get the reward.
I know. And like I said, hiking and biking is a little easier on the body, so you can still do that within reason. Like, I don't like to run up these things ever. And I, you know, when I was a kid, maybe, but not anymore. But, and I'm sure as I get older, like, the, you know, the peaks will get a little, like, lower. But as of now, I'm still able to try to, like, it's mind over matter for me, right? Just kind of, just kind of push through as much as you can. I've gotten better, though. I'm not, like, stupid where I'm like, okay, I'm going to, like, I see, like, now if I do something too stupid that it'll keep me on the sideline for too long. So I'm within, I know my capabilities now. Like, I'm not going to overdo it just to say I did it. But but I skirt the line. I'm like, I want to say I did it.
I know when you hear the phrase, like, listen to your body, it's like, yeah, but my mind's telling, and my heart is telling me to, like, do it.
But, like, it's so funny because, like, you're like, I'm like, what am I doing? Like, it's not like I'm competing for anything. But it's just that mentality, you know, as an athlete, like, I'm like, who the heck is going to care that I did this besides myself? But I have to do it, right? And I'm like, I said, and I'm like, well, like, I mean, I'm with nobody usually half the time. So it's not like I have to, like, show off for anyone. I'm just like, my own competitive internal nature is like, you need to keep going. Like, you need to be able to go home and sit there and say, wow, I did that. And that's going to be all the reward you're going to get. But I need to do that for my own mental sanity, right? So,
it is funny what drives us all, but I can totally relate to that too.
Yeah, I'm total type A like that, perfection. You know, just like, I was a psych major in college, so I, like, diagnose all my, you know, ailments.
Wow. Well, that's cool. Well, lastly, I just wanted to give you this time to just let us know what's going on in the world as far as anything, you know, you want to promote or talk about, or you're, you know, if you want to tell us, you mentioned the website, but if you want to bring that back, just anything at all, you go for it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, my, like I said, the one thing I would, just because selfishly it's passionate and it helps others, is just the nonprofit, to pump that. I mean, the other stuff is my job, and I'd love people to read all my stuff, but, like, that's helping me more than others. So I would really love for you to help others. And so the nonprofit Goods for Greatness, I mean, all sports, I know this is probably going to be a largely tennis audience, which is actually awesome, because tennis is the one where we get tons of donations that are available.
Yeah.
Rackets, people go through rackets, they go through bags.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if anyone has anything or has some, like I said, right now the finances aren't great with everyone, so I understand. But if they ever have any extra money, I mean, $20 makes a huge difference for kids. So any money, I mean, any racket donations, just goodsforgreatness.org. You can find me on Twitter at rpotkey, P-O-T-K-E-Y. You can find me on Facebook. You can, I mean, I don't know, rpotkey@yahoo.com. I don't care. My personal.
We'll find you.
I mean, I'm a writer, so it's out there. Just contact me. I mean, if you want to help, I want to find a way for you to help. And I'll make it as easy as possible for anyone, because I want every child to be able to play sports. And I know now more than ever, once this ends, their parents are not going to have the money to do it. So if we can give them the equipment and they can even just play around in, you know, their yard or go with friends and just at least experience something healthful like that, I want them to have the stuff to do it without their parents like not being able to buy it. So once this is coming to an end, or right now, if you clean out your stuff and you have stuff or you have some extra money and that's something that you would like to donate, please reach out, because there's so many kids that just, we take for granted, a lot of us, that we can play sports, and there's so many that want to and just don't have the equipment to do it. So, so yeah, Goods for Greatness. Anyone that wants to reach out to me, and I'm more than happy to make it work on your terms.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Rahana. And that was awesome. Special to have you on, and I know we'll talk again soon.
No, this is great. I'm really glad you started this. I've enjoyed all of them. I love learning about people in all professions and all walks of life. So yeah. I'm really glad you started this, and you're natural at this. So you're gonna, you know, have to keep it up now. Started a cottage industry here for yourself.
So. Well, thanks so much, and I just wanted to thank our listeners. Thanks so much for tuning in. I wanted to give you all a heads up. There will be some more episodes coming in here. We're going to try to do twice a week. So stay tuned for that. You can find us on socials at Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, at Me and My Racket, and give us a follow, a like, whatever you want. And if you enjoyed the content, you can subscribe below and hit the little notification bell so you don't miss any updates. And we will see you next time on Me and My Racket with our next guest. Bye for now. See y'all. Thank you.